free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Swiss film director Tim Fehlbaum studied at the HFF Munich. While there, he made several short films, music videos, and worked as a camera operator on documentary films. In 2011, Tim made his feature film debut with the post-apocalyptic horror film Hell. He followed that up in 2021 with science fiction thriller Tides, which premiered at the Berlin Film Festival. His latest feature, September 5, which Tim co-wrote like his other two features, received an Oscar nomination for Best Original Screenplay and 10 German Film Prize nominations, among many other accolades. We talked to Tim via video call for this interview. Tim, welcome back to Deep Dive Genre.
Hallo, hi, ich freue mich sehr. Grüß dich. Ich freue mich mal wieder über Genre zu reden, nachdem das Thema sozusagen meiner vorherigen Filme, wobei ich ja auch Filme, das finde, dass der letzte Film September 5 auf eine Art auch ein Genrefilm ist, aber das ist ein anderes Thema.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us again.
Ah, yes, it's in English. Sorry,
I forgot. English, yes, but we'll keep it in. And this time, it's all about your first feature, Hell, which came out in 2011. And the follow-up Tides, which came out in 2021. We're going to skip the general questions for anybody who wants to hear more about your journey to becoming a director and how you commit to your projects can listen to the episode in season 7. And we'll dive right in. Hell was your thesis film at the HFF, if I'm correct. How did you find the story or have the idea for the film?
Well, actually, it wasn't my thesis film.
Oh, okay.
I think thesis film is probably Abschlussfilm, right? It was my debut. I made a short as a thesis film, actually. Hey. I had the idea for Hell for quite some time, actually. What I wanted to do was actually the original idea. It sounds, so it might sound funny now, but I wanted to do a zombie movie.
And
a very special kind of zombie movie. And you have to be aware that this was before The Walking Dead and before World War Z or so, before zombies became almost like it's a genre on its own. We had 28 Days Later that actually impressed me a lot and like took the zombie genre away from the, I would say, I don't know how I say, like, I mean, I love your, yes, from the niche and also in a way, in a little bit, I don't know if that's the right word, but from the pulp direction, you know, that from the Romero, the slow walk, and I love these movies, of course, but from the slow walking zombies, they suddenly were fast and it had some, like Danny Boyle, of course, made this look very cool. It had that urban vibe, Cillian Murphy, like we saw him for the first time and it was a different kind of a zombie movie. And I thought, like, I want to do a zombie movie. And what my idea was, because I was always very much interested in genre films, but I studied in Munich.
What are you trying to say? It's like, I studied in Munich.
I'm trying to say that the Munich Film School is what we call eine Schule or a film school for Autorenfilme. Like, it's rather for the artist film. And that's also a very good thing, as I think. But that also obviously also had an influence on me. And I generally, and still to this date, I'm not someone who's like, oh, I love genre films and don't like other films. Oh, I love arthouse films or I don't like that. I just love films about more than everything else. For me, it's just about, is a movie really good or does it say something to me? And I don't make that distinction into, oh, I like genre film or I like arthouse film. I also worked a lot as a cameraman in my film school for other students' project. Because, I don't know, I just love to do it. And I worked a lot for documentary people. So I worked a lot on documentaries. For example, I shot a documentary about, I was as a DP, as a cameraman, about street punks in Moscow. So what I also loved was just to observe with the camera. And I thought, like, why? My idea was, like, why don't I mix this art house approach that I get and whatever I learned from the documentary with the genre? So I wanted to do a very realistic zombie film, like taking it super serious, not making it ridiculous in any way. And also very early on, I had the idea, I'm going to cast it with these high class actors. Very early on, I saw 4 Minuten and I said, I want to have Hannah. Lars Eidinger was like the star from the theater scene. He wasn't Lars Eidinger back then. He had alle anderen, but he was not that superstar, you know?
Yeah.
I said, I want to have Lars. He was the superstar in the theater scene very much. I want to have this Lars Eidinger. And then he even had the idea, I want to have Angela Winkler, you know, like from whom I knew from Volker Schlöndorff's film. And I thought two things. Like, first of all, you are not that busy because these are probably good actors, so you can focus more on the visuals. And it also immediately gives the whole project a touch of class. And I thought there's something interesting in that trash, that especially back then it has been seen as a trashy genre, the zombie film. That changed, of course, today. As I said, like, it was before we had all these serious zombie films. And mixing that with that genre idea with the art house. And I thought that would be an interesting hybrid. And the other thing that I wanted, and it's not so long ago, but it's, I don't know how, we maybe can talk about this a little bit more later. But what I really wanted to do was to have a female lead.
Mm-hmm.
And that back then, it was like, 2008 or 2009 when I started the project, was something you had to fight for, actually. I had two things that were like strict that I want to say, this I don't want to change. First, I wanted to be in German because a lot of people said, like, why don't you shoot it in English? This is like an English movie, but this has bigger market in English. But what I absolutely wanted to avoid is that it gets like one of these movies that back then it was still DVDs that are in the DVD corner, like of the cheap, trashy horror films or so.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, a lot of genre films that were shot out of Germany in English, then automatically landed in the corner. I said, no, I want to make it feel authentic. I can only shoot a film in German that's really authentic. I wanted to see in that German landscape. And I thought that's a very unique setting for a zombie film. And the other thing was that a female lead, that it was like, I have four sisters, and they, when I was at this, you mentioned the other podcast where I talked about, there I talk about this, that before I started at film school, they had to act. I was always doing movies and they always had to act in my films that I did as a kid.
Yeah.
And they always said, like, okay, we act for you, but you have to do one thing for us later. Like, you have to write cool female characters later. Mm-hmm. If you ever become a female character, I promise to them. And so I also insisted that it has to be this female lead. And yeah, I'm not kidding. We heard a lot of times when we started the project, we would finance this or whatever. We would help you, but make the lead a male and we're on board.
Wow.
That, of course, obviously, and that's, thank God, has completely changed nowadays.
Yeah, talking about finances and producing partners, how soon did you start your conversations with Thomas
Yes, so it was not Constantine at the time. That was Paramount. You say Constantine?
Constantine.
Oh, yeah. No, it was Paramount. But they came on later. Like, I can tell you. So, and it's actually a good story because Thomas, I got on board. Like what I then did, like when you said, like, I want to do a zombie film, people, especially back then, people really didn't take you serious. They were like, what, we want to do a zombie? Yeah, and with a female lead and in German language, set here in the Alps. And they're like, yeah, maybe not. So what I figured is like, but I always said, like, but it has this cool look. It's going to look like a documentary and like really look really gritty and real, and people just didn't get that. So I thought, like, what I want, and this is nowadays done more often, and I think it's something that I would very much advise for as a strategy for get your long feature financed. What I did was shooting some kind of what I would call what today is called the proof of concept. So I shot a little short film, which I was very shy at film school, and I didn't go out like say, I want to shoot a zombie movie, give me the money for a crane, a short film that for a crane, camera crane or anything. No, I just asked an actress that I knew and an actor that I knew personally, can we do like this little scene? It's a very simple scene at the Isar. We shot it. I did the camera myself. It's very, very low budget, like just at some person being for, there for the makeup, because the whole blood, of course, was important. It was just a very, very simple scene about the couple lying there getting attacked by zombies. It sounds really silly. The movie is called Zombies am Flauchen. And I shot this and I edited it and and it got accepted to some film festivals, which was actually also really cool, right? And then Thomas Wöbke, and I always said like at these film festivals, I want to do this, but in long. Mm-hmm. Now, my roommate, Tim Möck, back then, was a good friend of Thomas Wöbke, and he showed it to Thomas Wöbke. And Thomas Wöbke, and I will never forget that to Tim Möck, by the way, that he made that connection. And Thomas Wöbke said, oh, yes, I'm interested. And he said to me and said, I'm really interested in that, but if I'm going to do it, or let's find something else for the zombies. He was just like, the zombies is not... At first, I was like, no. But then I felt like, yeah, maybe... if you have a good idea. And then we came up with the idea with the sun. And first of all, I got to say also back then, the climate change hasn't been an everyday topic. That was the now. And it was like once or twice or so. And then we saw an article in the Süddeutsche Zeitung, I think, about the climate, how it's getting hotter and hotter. And firstly, I got to say, clearly say, what triggered me or where I thought like, oh, wow, that could be a cool concept, wasn't the ecological message that it would have underneath. I was immediately saw like, that's a cool visual idea, because I knew already no matter how much budget we get, it's going to be low budget.
Yeah.
And I said like, okay, what we can't do, and I think this is also something I would advise to filmmakers trying, or young filmmakers trying to make a genre film from here, from Europe, what you always should avoid is try to copy that whatever you find cool from US stuff or like big movies. I draw my main inspiration is coming from other movies. So I'm not saying don't draw your inspiration, but don't try to copy, because so what I knew is like, I will never have the budget that I will be able to compete with special effects of, for example, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that name later too, a Roland Emmerich movie.
Yeah.
Or Steven Spielberg End of the World movie or something. So I knew I'm going to have a fraction of the budget, and immediately with the sun, the idea with the sun came, that the sun is very bright and people don't go out anymore without covering themselves. I thought like, oh, that's super cool for two reasons or for three reasons. One, it's fresh. I haven't seen that. Zombie film I have seen before, but that's a fresh scenario. And the other thing would be that the underlying message, suddenly it has also a message about the ecological, do you know, the climate change message, but not in a on the nose way. It's just there. And the third thing is, and this was where I was like, okay, that's really a cool idea. Every time I felt like I'm going to have an outside shot where usually I would have to dress a lot, like a long street, or we would have to have computer effects that were even more expensive back then. We just overexpose the image. We just say that the sun is so bright that we only see that, you know, glimpses of the background, and everything is just basically bright white. And then we also came up with that title, Hell, that even reflects that already, because Hell,
yeah,
as you obviously know, has also another meaning in German language. It means bright light. So then that concept was there, and we thought about, okay, if the sun is so, then we thought about like, okay, if we have a horror film, so who could be the antagonist if it's not zombies? Then we just made a logical for like, okay, if the sun is so bright, then there's no water anymore, then there's also probably not much to eat around, plants don't grow, animals die. So we thought, who could be, maybe, and I'm not going to spoil it for people who want to see it, like, what could be the bad guys? Maybe it's other human beings looking for food, I say. So that is how the idea was born.
I talked to Markus Förderer.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that you guys very early, as soon as you sort of had decided or were sure that you were able to make the film, that you started experimenting with, you know, the camera and the lights. And he mentioned the day for night process that you guys used on Hell. Can you explain a little bit more about that to our listeners, what that entailed exactly? Marcus also mentioned that you guys got a lot of sunburn.
Yes. No, that also, yeah, that's funny. Yeah. No, but first of all, I want to say about Marcus, like he was fresh from film school and he was still at film school, actually. And I almost finished film school. Everybody, including me, was a little bit critical of like, okay, it's my first feature film. It's kind of a risky project. As such a young and unexperienced cameraman, maybe not be the good idea. Maybe we should have someone who's more experienced, you know, to complete my inexperience, you know. But Thomas also insists, like, I think he met with Marcus first and said, like, there's something with this guy. You have to meet him. And Marcus came into the office and, like, for a first meeting, he had prepared, like, this much of a folder with visuals and everything. And we talked and talked and talked. And immediately we're completely one wavelength. And after that, I said to Thomas, yeah, well, I think that's really the guy. And also, like, I mean, I don't know if he told you, but he wanted to be a magician before he became
No, he didn't tell me that.
Yeah. and he always is about in-camera tricks. He loves that. Mm-hmm. And that's also where you're like, okay, in-camera tricks is exactly what I need. Like, in-camera tricks means, yeah, you could do stuff for real on set, which is usually to achieve some kind of a visual effect or something, which is usually the cheaper way than to do it in CGI. It's not all, apart from that, it's also just a more fun way because it's also fun on set to do stuff for real. But back then also we knew we're not going to have much money for it, for that project. So we can't compete with these big CGI films. So we just have to do it with cool camera tricks to make it original in another way. And Marcus was the ideal partner for that. And for the brightness, for example, he had this idea of always, I'm sure he talked about this, reflecting the sunlight directly with mirrors into the camera. Or instead of having like expensive movie lights, you know, spotlights and stuff, he always had rather the trick of just a person, like one of his assistants with a flashlight really close to the lens, and that gives you that lens flare, you know.
Okay.
And another practical trick that we decided to do is like, because night shoots are also more expensive usually, especially since the whole film was an outdoor film. We knew that a lot of films, we're going to have a lot of night scenes. And it was clear, like, for two reasons that we're not going to shoot them at night. One is like, it's really expensive. It makes a shoot complicated. And you have to have all these lights. Plus, I think it always is, how do you light? And I'm not a DP, but I think it's a good question for a DP. How do you light a scene in a wood at night? Because obviously there's no light in the wood at night, except for the moonlight or so. So how do you light that? Then you have to put the spotlight somewhere and so on. And look somehow real, you have to have a lot of spotlights, you know, and everything. So we decided, you know, why don't we do it the old way, the old school way, like they did it in the Westerns, which is called Day for Night, for example. So basically the idea is you shoot a scene and you shoot it during the day, but you are very careful in how the light is. So you always try to shoot against the sun so that it's just backlit and not too much light. And then in post-production, you turn it blue and then you just say that this is night. And then you can shoot much faster again. I must say it was more complicated in editing than we thought before. A lot of shots just couldn't be used because it was just too bright. At the end, in a way, it was still the better way, I think. And also we, in a way, we could justify it by saying, oh, you know, the sun is so bright, maybe even during the night, that the sunlight that gets reflected by the moon is also brighter.
Yeah.
You know, you do something visual and then you basically try to find the explanation for that in the plot.
Talking about setting, who had the terrific idea to film in a burnt down forest?
Well, yeah, that was nice. For me, it was just an outdoor film because I thought I don't want to dress these cities and stuff. We've seen a city, post-apocalyptic zombie city in 28 Days Later. That's a great, one of the biggest, greatest openings, you know, when Cillian Murphy walks around in that deserted London. We can't compete with that anyway. We can't do that kind of shots. And I thought, but what we can do, like the nature, you see these burnt down forests and like a deserted highway seem to be a good, or a gas station, like these kind of locations. And I just also wanted to make it a road movie. And I thought that the Swiss, not the Swiss, German or Switzerland, it's not defined where it takes place, but somewhere in the Alps, it takes place for sure. And I thought this is a more original setting. I thought a burnt down forest is probably more easy to find than, than we would need to dress the whole city. But it turned out to be also really tricky to find.
And for tides, you had that inspiration when you were at the North Sea and you were standing in the Watt, but obviously would not have been possible to shoot the whole film there. How long did it take to set up the production process for tides in the Bavaria studios with the simulated Watt floor? I would assume that was complicated as well.
That was very complicated. Tides is probably one of the, or certainly is logistically the most complicated film I've done so far. And I want to credit the producers, of course, Thomas Wöbke and Philipp Trauer from Berghaus Wöbke, and also especially our line producer, Mark Nolting, because that's a big part of what he did so amazingly, is like how to combine all these sets. Because as soon as water comes into play, because like I had a few directors that warned me before, for example, Hans Horn. I don't know if you know his films, like he did Open Water 2, which I, a film that I really admire, actually. If you're a genre film, you should watch that film. That was such a great movie. I think it shouldn't have been called Open Water 2. That's also what Hans Horn also said. They just tried to make it part of that franchise to sell it better. But actually, it's just, it doesn't have to do anything with open water, except that it takes place on the at sea. But it's like, it's a movie about, it's a really good premise. And anyhow, and he told me, oh, I will never do something on the sea again. Like working with water is so annoying. And I heard that from other places. And then, of course, as I'm fascinated with reading about other film productions or big film productions. So I'm always...
What was the Kevin Costner film?
Exactly. You had that as the one example, Waterworld. Everybody knows that Titanic went so crazily over budget because of the water and everything. And everyone warned me, and I still did that movie that already, the title is called Tides, right? It's like about water. And I thought like similar as the Hellway. Oh, we're going to shoot everything in the Wattland, at the North Sea, and it's just going to look amazing. And we just have a skeleton crew. And well, I was naive. In the Wattland, it's so complicated to shoot there. That was not the same as with Hell in the Bavarian forest or so, or it's super complicated. You only have so and so many hours to shoot.
Yeah. I think we can only go in with like horse
carriages. Exactly. Exactly. The equipment needs to go there by horse carrier or by traktor. I don't know the English word right now. There are a lot of areas that are under environmental protection. And so as soon as we started to go into pre-production and started to think like really where to shoot this, it was clear, oh no, we actually can't shoot it there. We can only shoot like very few days there and only with as few actors as possible. Mm-hmm. So we decided to only shoot these scenes where she alone wanders around in the tidelands there. Because with her alone, we could do it. We could do it in a skeleton crew and we could get these really beautiful, authentic moments of dusk at dawn or whatever in the real one, and shoot the wide shots and shoot what we call plates, you know, like for background that you've later used to maybe put it somewhere, and then decided to recreate the rest of the wetland scenes on stage. And again, there comes Marcus into play, because usually you say, okay, then we just have a set where we have a huge green screen and then we always put that in the background. But Marcus said, no, 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 no. Then every shot would have been a CGI shot.
Yeah.
So what we decided, he had this idea, let's shoot it old school with backdrops. So he shot photos of the wetlands on location and then printed them really big on a screen and then backlit them. And just in the Bavaria Film Studio, we had this, like, it looked absurd. The floor was important, of course, that the floor was authentically.
Yeah, because that's a texture thing as well.
Exactly. And always the most critical thing with that is when the actor or actress, you know, where the foot hits the floor. Mm-hmm. There you always see if that's also a CGI or that it doesn't work. But the background was just out of focus, heaven. And of course, it helped us that the Wattland is something not very dimension, like at city you have a house and then like you have the...
There's a lot of horizon.
Yes, just horizon and it's flat. So you don't see the, as soon as it's out of focus, you don't see the trick that it's actually just a screen. It feels like, and then we worked with a lot, that was super important to me, a lot of smoke that we said that this is the fog in front of camera. Yeah. So that obviously that also helped.
We talked a lot about visuals and technical things now, but I think for both films, what's really important and worked really well was sort of like the emotional core of the stories. Looking at that, do you have a favorite scene from both Hell and Tides that carries that for you?
I think probably for me, it would be some of these moments at the beginning of Hell where they're just in the car, where I had these actors. I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about this, where I was like, it was my first feature film. And I had these actors in front of camera, Hannah Hertzsprung, and I'm really still to this day, because it was a crazy project, and I'm so thankful to Thomas Webke that he believed in that, and Ruth Waldburger from Switzerland, Gabi Walter from Germany, but especially also the actors, like a star like Hannah Hertzsprung, that she agreed to do this project. She was this super up and coming art house star or general star in Germany. And for her to agree to do that project, Lars Eidinger, who was also just freshly coming from Alle Andern, which won Berlinale or something, Stipe Ercek, and Lisa Vicari, who was Lisa, but like I had these four actors, and she back then, Lisa Vicari, that's another long story that I could talk for too long maybe about how we discovered her.
I talked to her as well, and she has so many fond memories of the film.
Oh, you know, casting her was just this magic moment where you're like, we had Hannah and we had this combination castings, and it was what you always wish for as a director. Lisa Vicari walked in. I set the camera up and I was like, oh my God, I saw them next to each other. I thought, oh my God, yeah, they really look like sisters. Please, please, please. I hope she's also good. Then we did the first take. Hannah said her line. Lisa said her first line, then her second line. And then I walked out and said to Thomas, okay, talk to the mom. This is her. I want to get this. And that was just this magic casting moment. Anyhow, like working with these small moments at the beginning in the car, when they also listened to Nena, 99 Luftballons, you know, another fun story, how we got the rights to that song. Anyhow, and it has this post-apocalyptic feeling, and you don't see, you know, it doesn't include any special effect or so, because the fun thing is we then had the idea, because we couldn't afford to always have we had a lot of scenes in the car at the beginning, and we couldn't afford to do that green screen or so and I also didn't want that, the outside, you know, and then we would have had to have always like these huge sets in background. So we just said, oh, what did they do? Of course, because the sunlight is so bright, they covered all windows with newspapers and stuff, like as if they would be vampires afraid of the sun. And shooting in that car and these scenes where these characters are in the car, and it's a very original setting. It's claustrophobic, but you have the dimensions at the tensions between the sisters. Then the new guy, Stipe, comes in. Lars playing the boyfriend. That is probably my favorite moments of the film.
You mentioned that it was your first feature and that you got goosebumps thinking about the first moments. But I was also wondering, what was your biggest learning or takeaway from your first feature?
Well, actually, it's something that I also learned from September 5, which maybe also was a little bit the problem with Tides. I learned that in the reduction, if you have a limited budget, don't see it as a threat.
Yeah.
But rather see it as a chance for enhancing creativity and originality. Because if we would have had a medium budget or so with Hell, we would have tried to do all of that, you know, copy, use CGI, work, and then it wouldn't have worked. Then it wouldn't have felt authentic. Then it would have been a wannabe of one of these big Hollywood post-apocalyptic movies or so. Yeah. And similar with September 5, my last movie, where at a certain point it was a complete different movie, being told from all other sides, from the perspective of police, politicians, everything. It was a huge project and we just couldn't finance it. And then we had this idea of how about we set it entirely in the control room. And that for me is just, you know, we all know that the story of Jaws, the shark doesn't work. Steven Spielberg had to come up with an idea that the robot didn't work. So in editing, they suddenly thought like, oh, it's actually much scarier if you just show the POV of the shark and we see the feet and everything. And we have that score from John Williams. And it's so much more scary. If The Shark would have worked, that movie wouldn't have been that successful. It would have been pulpy. Yeah. You know, it would have gone into the monster genre. That opened it for everybody to be scared and for it to be interesting. And the weakest moment of the movie are actually when you see the shark and the fake blood and everything. And you see that kind of robot. But I really have to apologize. There's no weak moments in that film. Who am I to say there are weak moments in Jaws?
You're the audience and you have your take on that.
Yes, thank you. But like, I just felt like a weak moment in Jaws. What is that? Like, it's not possible. Anyhow, that was also a good example of how you have to work with that reduction. And I'm saying with Tides also what really complicated, and the movie looks so much more than the amount of budget that we have.
Yeah.
But to me, that's the biggest lesson of Hell. Maybe it felt that the authenticity and the originality comes from exactly that limitation. And I think this is also like for aspiring filmmakers. So what I would say, like, just do if as long as it's coming from the heart, that is so much more important than how much budget do you have?
Absolutely. And I mean, going back to what you said earlier, you know, like Roland Emmerich films and let's, you know, talk Marvel and superhero films. I mean, that's all fun and games and, you know, obviously sometimes it's really, really mind-blowing when you see what they do with CGI. You know, sometimes you walk out and you feel a little bit like you had too much fast food.
Yeah, no, I know what...
But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't stick with you. It doesn't, you know, touch my heart most of the times, I have to admit. So that's why I personally prefer smaller films and I love genre films, especially budget is reduced and you can really see that people thought about how they want to portray the story and how innovative they were. I mean, that is so, so great and so much fun.
Yeah, of course, like getting back to Spielberg again, like the example, of course, is why the first Jurassic Park is still the best, of course, where they had, and you see the least of dinosaurs back then, and it's a mix of practical effects and real effects, and that makes it just so much, still when you watch it today, it still holds up. The dinosaurs in that film still looks so much better. Sorry, but like it looks still like, it looks so good, so great. And that's because it has a mix and because you don't see it that often. And the anticipation grows. And as you say, the more you see it, the less it impresses you. On the other hand, of course, I wouldn't say that the budget or the amount of CGI is deciding on whether a film is interesting or not. I think there's also a lot of really, really great movies in that area that have that kind of budget. But I see a little bit what you mean with the kind of, oh, if I see like the 50th dinosaur in a group or whatever in minute 20 or something, then it's like, oh, it's nothing special anymore to see the dinosaur.
I mean, I have to admit my favorite sci-fi film is still Another Earth. It's just a few shots of Earth that basically sci-fi, but it really, really works. I mean, for me, it was one of the best films in that.
I love that movie. We have similar tastes. I absolutely love that movie too. The few special effects that they had, though, were really greatly made, you know, that this other Earth looked like we see the moon today. So whenever they made it like really, really cool. Marcus actually worked with the director later on iOrigin. Or for another example, for me, one of my favorite genre movies from the last years would be Under the Skin.
I talked to Marlon Anderson as well, yeah.
Yeah, a movie that doesn't include too much CGI or so, but that also blends genre with art, much more art in that case, of course. But it also has some genre elements.
Yeah. And finally, this time I have only one question for you for the end. Have you come a bit closer to deciding what your next project after September 5 is going to be? And can you share anything about that with us?
I'm just coming from a call with Morris Binder, the writer of September 5, and we just talked about what we're doing right now. I don't know. Yeah, that's a little bit too early. But for me, I love to be working with him again and with Thomas and Philip from Berghaus Wöpke Film.
Yeah.
So, we're developing. I can't say too much, but I can maybe say if it's going to be the one, then it won't include too much CGI. It's a very practical, physical adventure. Well, we'll see.
We'll see. Okay. And that was it.
Hopefully we talk in like 2 years or so from now about it. And hopefully you say you like the movie.
I hope so too, but I'm pretty sure. If you and Lawrence and Thomas are involved, then the chances are very, very good. Thank you so much, Tim, for sitting down with us.
Thank you, Christine. I enjoy this. I'm glad we could finally make it. I was just a weird time travel thing, like thinking about hell and everything. You confuse me a little bit emotionally. Now I have to go back into the real world. I'm like, oh, no. But I enjoyed this very much. I hope the listeners do too.
I'm sure.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.